All right. We are live with Frank Vaughn. He's the host of The Fulcrum on YouTube. It's at Frank Vaughn. His ex account is FP Vaughn III, I guess, like Roman numeral three after that. And you've been doing great content. I like your tagline here. Control your vices, delay gratification, lead yourself. That's a good way to summarize it. I love your work and it's good to have you on the show. Thanks for joining us.
Oh, you're welcome. Good to be here, man.
Yeah, it's awesome to come on. We just started getting into Canadian politics, like really getting into it last couple of years because we've been podcasting since 2013, but now everything's affecting us so much. But it's so interesting to meet all these other people that are in it, even that live, you know, in the same province, and you're coming to the same conclusions in a lot of things. I mean, I wouldn't agree with you on everything, of course, but just, you know, with this whole fight in the last 3 or 4 months, and I keep saying to Darren, we got to get Frank on the show because, you know, you're doing some great deconstruction, talking about, you know, the crime syndicate that Canada is and just really pushing back in a lot of the right ways. So we appreciate all that you do. Are you putting out like daily videos now?
Pretty much. I started skipping Sundays. We'll see if that lasts, but pretty much daily content. Sometimes I do a live on Saturdays, but it's not a scheduled thing. It just happens when I decide it happens.
How long have you been doing it?
Well, I've been doing it on and off since 2016, but I haven't been at it the entire time. I've had busy spots, and then I've had spots. There was a couple of years there between late 2021 and I'd say 2023. I dipped in again, and then I dipped back out because I just wasn't ready. Now I think I'm here, and I think I'm here for life. I don't think I'm going anywhere because I had a farm too, and I had other things that I did. And then because I had the farm, I had a public facing business. So my address was available online. So things started really blowing up in the second iteration of, what it is I do. People started showing up at my house and knocking on my door and introducing themselves because they'd seen a video and they'd looked up my address. And then one morning I got up and it was clear somebody was there wandering around my house at night. So I had a newborn son, we were all asleep inside at the time. And I thought, well, I guess I better start the process of figuring out how to get my address offline and maybe move. And that's one of the things that led to the move out here. It's not the only thing, far from the only thing. I always wanted to come here, but I'm a little bit more ready in this iteration for that outcome. I'm a lot further from public transit. Let's put it that way.
Was that attention like fan-like or more like not fan-like?
You know what? Nobody meant any harm. Okay. I think there were 7 or 8 instances. I can't recall which of those, but it was 7 or 8, including the nighttime instance, which was the weird one. When you see somebody's been around your house while you're asleep inside, that really, it's like, it wasn't that the people who I met were bad intentioned, but they were a sign of things to come. And at the time, things were really starting to blow up. And I thought, well, if I don't nip this in the bud now, change things, then I won't be able to nip it in the bud later.
Especially when you're talking about this stuff too. I mean, this is, you know, there's definitely a concerted effort to shut people like us up. And there's a lot of people that are kind of not sure why they hate us so much. And that can get kind of crazy. Like in, you know, 2021, we saw that, you know, Darren and I were like, oh my God, the neighbors are ready to turn us in. Like, this is getting crazy.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And that broke a lot of people. 21 and 22. That
on both sides. I'm broken. On both sides. I'm broken because sure. I don't even want to go out in the public anymore that much. I just don't give a shit anymore. I used to be very social. Now I'm just like.
Yep. And it left a lot of scars. It wounded a lot of families and friend groups and social groups, and it really disrupted things. And that's still ongoing. Like you just said.
Is that what prompted the move to Saskatchewan then?
That was, so the events of 21 and early 2022 were very much a motivator to get out of Ontario. Because Ontario, there was a lot of reasons, affordability being one. I lived in a very small house. It was built in 1895. She was pretty rickety. And I couldn't afford to get in anything bigger. I was already sleeping in my sunroom. And the kids had the bedrooms. And I knew that we had to get out, and the market seemed to solve a lot of the problem. Like, I wasn't sure how to sell the house, but the market pretty much made it viable to sell the house. And then it was a matter of picking where I went. And I looked west because I always knew I wanted to be here. I knew spiritually this is where I belonged. Politically, this is where I belonged. And yeah, anyway, just Saskatchewan was it. So we bought a house out here. We hadn't even came and seen it. And then we spent 3 months deconstructing our life and got in a truck and drove out here and hope the hell it all worked out. And so far it has.
How do you like it?
But the Ontario thing, just sorry, I got sidetracked there. There was a point where Doug Ford was saying, you know, if we got to go door to door, get needles in arms, that's what we're going to do. And as a man, I thought about that and what that meant for my life and my decision tree. And I thought, you know, I got to get out of here because I can't be here if that happens. Because yeah. There's just some things that you can't live with, right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So and Saskatchewan was one of the first places to lift mandates. They were one of the first places to acknowledge the mistake they made. It might not have been as strong a language as people would like, and I respect that. But you could kind of see the writing on the wall and that things were just better here. For a lot of reasons.
Can we talk about that a little bit more? Because it has to do with this election too, because you've been saying it on your channel, which is great, but I've been guilty of blaming the conservatives for not pushing back on the lockdowns enough. And you would argue that they actually did. So the way I remember it is like, we were fucked no matter who was in power. Like that's the way we were going about it is like, it doesn't seem to matter here who is in power. Now, you could probably help me, and it's probably a good thing to do since you just talked about it on your channel too, and that because, you know, you've been sort of pushing back against some of the other conservative channels that are giving the CPC maybe a harder time than we should. But, I mean, I'm with you on all the other stuff, right? It's I think that it's really important that Pierre gets as big of a win as he can. I think it's our only chance at slowing this train down.
Well, yeah, I mean, that's kind of what the Conservative Party is now. I've often said that if they win here and they try to do the right thing, they try to do even more than the right thing, more than they say they're going to do. They actually try to genuinely fix the problem. They'll find themselves opposed by a Senate that's been stacked by Trudeau. They'll find themselves opposed by a judiciary, the media, all these things. And we as a public need to see that. On the flip side, if they get in power and they don't do anything, then the mainstream right in this country becomes discredited and we have an opportunity to create something in that vacuum. As far as COVID goes, as soon as Erin O'Toole was gone, so in 2020 and 2021, I think anybody could be forgiven for being fearful upon first encountering this. I know that in January of 2020, February, March, into April of 2020, I was like, something's going on in China. It's bad. And eventually the government's going to stop telling us to eat fast food. They're going to flip their script. And when they do, they're going to break things. So now's a good time to get ready for that. Heading into 21, governments were just starting to get it. They were starting to understand this lockdown. They were getting sucked up in the zeitgeist. And find a government from Trump to any other government in the world that wasn't sucked into that in some form or another. I'm not trying to excuse anything. But what I know is O'Toole's language was he talked about calling for emergency measures and using the Emergencies Act. He faced a caucus revolt for that, and he had to leave. And Candace Bergen came in, and as soon as she came in, from that point forward, they were opposed to mandates. And Polyev and his people tried to pass bills in Parliament, I believe it's 3 times, banning mandates.
When was that then? Do you know timeline? Timeline wise,
we're into later 21 into 22, I think.
Okay. Off the top. Okay. Okay. Yeah. It doesn't have to be exact. I'm just trying to piece it all together. So later 2021. Yeah. Okay.
And before O'Toole had walked, I believe this is the case. You'd have to check the timeline on it. But when Pierre went to the convoy, and Leslyn Lewis went to the convoy, and a bunch of them went to the convoy, I believe he was still leader of the party. That was the end. Like that was getting pretty close to the end of O'Toole. So it's not so much that. Because they stood in the parliament and they said, you know, we got to get, you know, where's all the vaccines? Where's all the rollouts? Like, you know, they said the same words, but just about everybody was saying the same thing. But I believe there's a difference between that. I don't think it's good, but also that and supporting mandates, mandating that everybody must participate. So there might have been peer pressure. Everybody was under it. 87% of the country got the shot. and only 13% didn't, by official figures. But the idea that they supported mandates from square one and never did anything to try and stop them, they advanced bills. They got killed because they didn't have the seats in the House. And unfortunately, that's how our system works. That's how our parliament works. Our parliament's not even the government. They appoint the government. So if you don't have the seats, you don't have the power. And that's pretty much the end of the story, right? So it's not like I don't give them a blank check for it. I just think it's a differentiation that we should make. It's a detail.
Well, I'm probably remembering the O'Toole part. That's the part I'm probably remembering, like late 2020, early 2021. So I appreciate that. What you've said.
Well, I had Jason Kenney. I mean, I had Jason Kenney. We were supposed to be the conservative safeguard, and he just threw us completely under the bus.
Brother, Doug Ford did the same thing. He came out and he said there won't be any mandates. There won't be any passports. We're not doing any of that stuff. It's too much of an infringement on charter rights. And then he came out with his shoulders all scrunched up, looking like he had been shot at, saying, we're doing it all. We're going full ballistic. And Kenny did the same thing. So I don't pretend to know why, but everybody came into line. And on the one hand, you could take a simplistic explanation of it, and that's that none of them wanted the death on their hands, because that's, you know, a political hot potato is causing the death of anybody. Or on the other hand, maybe they got a talking to, and the talking to was, look, the world's going this way and it's political suicide, career suicide. You'll never work in the private sector again if you don't go along with this. I don't know. But
it's just frustrating because when you're paying attention, when we're paying attention, and you see them, and you've used this example too in the current election, which I appreciate as well. It's not just as easy, like they have to still get elected, right? They can't just stand on pure principles or they'll just never get elected. So, you know, it's just hard to see your politicians grovel, like, or not grovel, but just collapse like that. When you see that different evidence and you're not following what the mainstream's doing, you've already done the deconstruction work and you're like, come on, they must know this too, but they just can't do it. It's frustrating.
When it comes to politics and politicians, there's a game that they play. They're trying to get elected, like you just highlighted. So that's why they go and they do all the things and they put on the headscarves and they do all this, what we call virtue signaling collectively. But we're not playing the game out here. You know, we have a greater degree of freedom. I don't pretend that the CPC is perfect, but they're playing in a very imperfect playing field. Like 60% of this country hates Donald Trump, and the concentration of those people is much higher in Ontario and Quebec than it is in the rest of the country. And that's the pathway to power. Like if you lose the election, you don't get anything. So they try to play the game their way. I disagree with some of it. I wish to God that they would take a more diplomatic stance with Donald Trump and say, you know, the messaging could be so simple. Look at the mess the liberals made of everything. They've destroyed our relationship with our best trading partner and our geopolitical, the greatest geopolitical partner we've ever had. Look at the mess they've made. Now we got to come in and fix it. Like they could have went that road, but instead they decided, no, we got to do the anti-orange man thing because Canada hates them and they won't vote for us if they think we're just going to give the thing away to them, even if Mark Carney's going to be the guy that does the giving away. The guy's going to fold like sheets once he's in there. They make judgment calls like the war in Ukraine. They're unconditionally supportive of continuing that war, which I think is just, it's stupid. It's killing a lot of people for no reason. Peace has been on the table and it's been hijacked. I hate that position of the Conservative Party, but you know, I've become pragmatic enough to look at the other things. Criminal justice, he's getting lambasted in the media right now because he wants to use the notwithstanding clause to make sure multiple murderers don't get released in out of prison on parole. I think that's pretty reasonable. And I think that strikes a stark contrast with the Liberal Party, who won't do any of that. You know, and there's other things, and I don't mean to hog the microphone. It's just there's...
Oh, no.
Well, the ultimate irony, I think, is that he says that, and I was just reading his article, like, right before we came on the air, the opinion piece he wrote for, I think, the Globe and Mail back in, like, 2022, right when the trucking thing was going down, and he's like...
But you can't believe the Globe and Mail. I mean, you can't believe everything you see in the Globe.
It's his piece. He wrote it. He wrote the piece. It's a guest piece by Mark Carney, so he's the writer. And that piece finishes off by him saying that he supports the use of the Emergencies Act. So, I mean, he's talking about here for murderers, for multiple murderers, we have to defend the Bill of Rights as the thing. But for protesters in Ottawa protesting mandates, throw the fucking book at them. That, I mean, that's basically what his article says. It says the full force of the law should be used.
Only certain protesters.
The truckers, well, specifically, I'm talking about.
No, but I mean, this is important. This is an important differentiation because in Montreal right now, like, there's only certain protesters that are getting the book thrown at them. So.
Well, to be fair, I think that is just for now. I mean, once the timeline would be to see more and more protests getting. I mean, the Palestine thing, that's a separate issue, but I think that the finish line is no more protests. I mean, you end up in the little cage protest area that's fenced in. It's like, yeah, you can go over there. There's not going to be any cameras over there, but you go get in the cage and do your thing.
Yep. Well, and the double standard's clear, and the public memory is abysmal. And I think part of it is the left doesn't really have a firm moral compass. They don't have a grounding in principle. And I don't say that to just, it's such a generalized label, but the fact is, if you can justify, if you can stand there and claim that you're for bodily autonomy and the freedom of choice, but you support a medical experiment that is unproven, not necessarily effective in any way, and you deny that person the right to make money and to eat if they don't partake in it, you think that's a justified infringement, but you think it's an unjustified infringement to want to hold multiple murderers accountable and keep the streets safe. The other thing that they support, and I've talked about this here in Saskatchewan because we've had two recently, guys who are multiple time offenders, sexual offenders of minors. So they offended, they got released, they reoffended, now they've been released again, and all the public gets is one notification. We're releasing them to this neighborhood, and then after that, their privacy is protected, and you just get to send your kids to the park, hoping that they don't get picked up by this guy. And this has happened twice in the last couple of weeks here in Saskatchewan. It happens every day all over this country. So we're worried about rights there, but we're not worried about rights for the Freedom Convoy. We're not worried about rights to medical choice and informed consent. And these contradictions exist all the way to the top in this country. And Mark Carney, he's guilty of the same thing. He's out there complaining about Poilievre right now, talking about using the notwithstanding clause, which Quebec has used 12 times to limit the rights of its own citizens to protect its French culture. But a prime minister is not supposed to use it to protect the public from multiple felons who may cause them harm.
There doesn't seem to be any acknowledgement or even willingness to look at the result of this policy and this double standard over the years. Like, I mean, even in Saskatchewan now, right? People are afraid to stop and help somebody on the side of the road that's waving for help on the car now. It's been spread around here. You got to be careful because there's people hijacking, right, on the side of the road. And there's fear the cities aren't safe anymore. I mean, I moved out of the city because, you know, my girlfriend wasn't safe walking around the trendy part of town anymore. I mean, this has been a devolution for 10, 15 years. And it's happening all over Canada, and they can't connect the two. Like this guy says in the chats here, this person, earmuffs, president of El Salvador today said you cannot hold the rights of criminals above the majority. I mean, this is, so there's some weird sympathy for criminals that is affecting everybody's peace of mind and safety right now.
Yeah, and I think that's a clear difference between Poilievre and the Mark Carney government is that, like, that's a big thing for me. I've got two young kids. I got a 5-year-old and I got a 3-year-old. And my wife takes them out and they do things together. And sometimes I'm not there. And I'd like them to be safe when they do that. And I mean, part of that is living in a small town and staying in a small community and knowing your demographics and everything. But the fact is, even if the police are doing their job, which in many respects they are, in the small town that I used to live near, Belleville, Ontario, I just read an article recently about how the cops there are making the arrests, but then the courthouse is throwing them back out on the street the same day and they reoffend. And they're just like, what are we supposed to do here? They're giving interviews to the police. You've got the Toronto Police Association, which has just gone full out based on X. I don't know if you follow their account, but like they're calling out the government every single day for the fact that they're just not doing the justice part of it. They keep the peace, but the justice part is missing. Wow. So like, this is a pretty big, a pretty big difference for me between the conservatives and the liberals, you know, and they might not tackle everything, but just putting violent criminals in jail and actually making a targeted effort to dry up some of the mass manufacturing of the drug supply that I've been talking about in my efforts. This isn't something I'm making up. It's like, this is your own government documents. This is your own media. And they're telling you the massive scale of this problem, but they're deciding the safe supply and needle exchanges are the way to go. Give the addicts drug, fill the streets. You've seen, if you lived in Saskatchewan, have you been up to PA yet? I mean, it's like a war zone. Some sections are Regina are like war zones.
Yeah.
That's a lack of justice.
Yeah.
That's exactly. Not so much lack of policing. So there's
I agree with you. That's huge. I saw some pushback on X about this three strike rule. There's an addict who's an ex addict who's very much pushing the liberals and stuff, and he was just, they're just saying like, oh, you know, this is not going to stop people from doing crime. It's not like people make this conscious decision to not do crime or do crime, but it does. It takes a while in the culture. But if you know you're going to go to jail for 10 years, you're going to be more careful. It's going to start affecting things. Of course it is. That's one of the whole reasons why, you know, violent criminals get thrown in jail. So that people think twice before they get involved in shit like that. I mean, it's not going to stop everything all the time, but you have to start working towards that. And not only that, but just keeping them there off the street will help as well. But yeah, I agree with you. The open drug use, that's a whole other issue that seems to be purposely mishandled is how I'd say it. Cause we kind of went the Portugal route without the other half, which is, you can't let people use openly on the street and in people's neighborhoods and all the crime and all that. So like you have to sort of finish that whole thing. If you're going to legalize it, you got to take care of the crime that goes along with it.
You have to have a lot more empathy for the person that's just trying to live their life and a lot less empathy for the person that's using a bus shelter to shoot up or smoke meth. And at the same time, rob people while they're trying to get on the bus. Like if you're an individual and you're a drug addict and you make the conscious decision to go and rob somebody and take their property so that you can buy your next fix, why do I have to have sympathy with that? Why do I have to have empathy for that? You've made a choice, and I need to make a choice too, whether I want to live with your choice or I want to worry about the person who's literally just trying to live their life. And you can say that maybe that's cold. Well, good. I mean, I've quit a couple things in my time. I didn't get better when I wanted to quit smoking more cigarettes wasn't going to help me. I had to just stop. And I've talked about before that many, many years ago, 20 odd years ago, I had a problem with opiates. I just stopped. And that's what you have to do. If you want to stop doing these things, you stop doing these things. There's this idea that if you used to know about alcoholics, you don't save an alcoholic by handing them more booze. You have to get them away from the booze. You have to dry it up. And then you have to give them time to understand that life can be better without those things.
Yep.
It's the same with drugs.
No, but abstinence has to be a goal. That's the problem with the harm reduction is it takes abstinence. It seems to take abstinence out of the picture. We're just going to keep you going and going and going and forget about getting off it altogether. I mean, I just passed 17 years of sobriety and clean and sober. So I get it. I mean, I had to cut it out completely. I couldn't just mess around with that. I would never get clean and sober.
Well, and the problem with harm reduction is it puts all the emphasis on saving lives. You know, if even one person dies, if even one person overdoses, is it not worth doing all these other things if we can just save that one person? But that one person that you're saving oftentimes is dying, getting Narcan, and a half hour later, they're back out on the street looking for the next hit because they're still alive. So I don't know if there's any saving that. And at the same time, as you're trying to save that life, you are taking the quality of life away from someone else who's just trying to get by. I mean, you could be walking through a Walmart with your kid and somebody could have crushed up a fentanyl on a box and your kid just happens to touch that with their hands and they're dead and you don't even know why. Like that's kind of, I'm more concerned about that kid. I'm more concerned about the side effects. We used to do things in this country like dryouts, halfway houses, asylums for the mentally ill. And we said that that's all bad. You can't do that anymore. So we just turned everybody loose on the street. It hasn't worked. Check any metropolitan city in this country. Find me one where this isn't a visible problem, where it wasn't a visible problem 15 years ago, because it wasn't. Small town, Ontario, Cobourg, Ontario, Belleville, Ontario. There's an indigent population now, drug addicts all over the place. They didn't exist when I was there when I was 25, 30 years old. It just didn't happen.
So, I mean, I want to spin this sort of forward to more current. We've got, I think I'd like to get your opinion on this, but I think what I've been sort of, I've been sort of disillusioned with voting, honestly, over the last little while. I'm in solid blue Alberta. So it's like, do I really need to go down to this thing today? And do I really need to vote for this when it's going to go anyway? I mean, I'll probably vote this year. I'm kind of a single issue guy. And, you know, for me, it was the big one right now. It was carbon tax, but so that's still on the table because that affects me at a huge degree. You know, I see my bills. My bills have doubled. I'm on a farm like you. So, you know, you're using more power, you got more delivery charges, and I see my bill double with the carbon tax. So that was the one. And the other one is guns for me. I mean, that's sort of this, there seems to be a clear divide on those two things on where they're headed. The liberals are trying to hide it like they're not going to do the carbon tax, but it seems like even that on mainstream is starting to come out of the bag a little bit. What's your sort of take on that? Because I feel like this election is going to be probably, you're going to have more of these sort of single issue people than you've had than ever before. And I don't know which way that's going to lean. What do you have any sort of predictions on that? Do you believe the polls? Do you think, I mean, it's hard to look at Pierre's rallies and think that Carney is still pulling ahead, but you know, what's your thought on that?
When it comes to the polls, the position I take right now is I'll believe it when I see it because I have a really hard time believing what I'm seeing. Like I understand that the Liberals are gaining support because the NDP's in free fall. There's a big part of that. I understand that the rallies are full, they're packed, they're beautiful. Things like that don't happen in Canada. He's a very popular person, but I'm not sure that translates to the general population. But that being said, I don't understand. I won't believe it until the results are starting to come in that the Conservatives are down to the Liberals. It's very hard for me to accept. I think that's objective. I don't think that is a subjective observation. As far as the carbon tax goes, I am reading Mark Carney's book as fast as I can. I want to get a book review out before advanced polling comes in. The whole book is about net zero. The whole book is about carbon taxes. The whole book is about central bank digital currencies. His whole life is about carbon taxes and net zero. He's the architect of the regime that we have in place now. He hasn't changed overnight. It's not going away. He's literally lying today. And we've seen it on the campaign trail where he says one thing, and as soon as the cameras turn off, he says something else. Like, and that's, I mean, maybe you'd say that's typical of politics, but I think Mark Carney is a very exceptional individual when it comes to that. Like, he's the Grim Reaper. That's what I call him on my channel. I think he's here to put the scythe in Canada's hopes. And when it comes to guns, man, legal gun owners, the most vetted community in the country, literally criminal background checks every single day, and not even just crime. If you get in a fight at a bar, you can expect a call from the Canadian Firearms Office, even if it's consensual fighting, because you're doing violence. And, you know, you might cause harm to the public. Like every single day you have your CPIC background check. You have to provide your conjugal partners going back. I can't even remember how many years. When I did it, it was 2 years. It might be longer now. So your ex-girlfriends have to sign off on your guns. That's not always easy to do. So everything that they're doing doesn't do anything about the crime problem. It's already illegal to take a handgun and shoot somebody in a city. It's illegal to take your handgun out of a safe in the city. It's illegal to do anything with your handgun off range or outside of the gun show or cleaning it at your own table at home. And a lot of them are now banned. You can't even take them out of the safe anyway, including your rifles. At the same time, shootings go on every single day across this country. Stabbings go on every single day. So targeting lawful gun owners doesn't make any sense. And there is a very clear difference between the Conservative Party, even of O'Toole versus Poilievre, because O'Toole said things privately. Poilievre has been very clear as he ran for leader and then in the post leadership that he's going to reverse C-21. He's going to reverse the orders in council. That's good news for gun owners. And it's the right thing to do because gun owners aren't the problem. Gangbangers are not going and getting their PAL and registering their firearms. You know, like we're jumping through all the hoops and we're getting all the penalties. And it's that's another clear difference.
What do you think? Where do you think? Because it seems crazy because they're like running now and banning more guns. So you just came from, you know, the belly of the beast not too long ago. Is like, it's hard for me to believe that running on banning guns is a winning strategy in Canada. You know, it honestly seems crazy to me. But I mean, I've grown up in Northern Ontario and just come further and further west. So I've never spent really any time down in, you know, the people that run Canada, basically, right where you came from. Is guns that big of a thing down there that people will vote Liberal just on gun control?
You know, I think it's a passover issue for a lot of people. So the people who don't own guns, they don't really care about it. They just think less guns, good idea. And I think it's a superficial decision like that. I think for a certain segment of the population, it matters a lot. They're very vocal. They have really adequate supplies of government funding, like PolySouvent. They are full of money and flush with cash to be anti-gun. I think the government has every incentive to take firearms away from lawful owners. In some ways, I think they have every incentive to not do anything about gang violence because they like the chaos and they don't like order. But that's a broader issue. I think on a more basic level, legal gun owners are an easy target to look like you're doing something about violence because they will comply. The vast majority of gun owners will comply with whatever order comes down because you don't want to lose your farm. You don't want to lose your life. You don't want to lose your possessions. You don't want to go to jail. And we're the ones that go to jail. The gangbangers get released. But if you're caught with a license and a firearm that's not in its right proper place, well, you face due process, whereas a criminal doesn't. I think it's just an easy way for them to look like they're doing something about a problem that they either don't want to deal with or is too complicated for their minds to handle. So it's optics. They don't mind making you suffer because they know you'll suffer.
Were you covering politics back in 2016 on the channel?
Yeah. So I started out just on Facebook in 2012, mainly talking about global warming. And just trying to make people understand that global warming wasn't the big crisis that everybody made it out to be. It had sucked me in for a long time, and then I started figuring things out. In 2015, tired of politics altogether, I saw Donald Trump's speech after the whole escalator thing that he references. I watched that speech, and I'm like, man, that's kind of different. He's talking about the Saudis and 9/11. He's talking about illegal immigration. That's really interesting. And I didn't know anything about him other than he had a TV show and he was in real estate. So I went deep, did a lot of research and followed him through some of the debates. And I'm like, you know what? This is interesting stuff. This is where I'd like to see this happen. I'd like to see where this can go. So that was the first time I got involved. And I had, my biggest online presence was actually back then. And then when he won the election about 6 months later, I gave all that up. And then 2017 came along. Bernier ran for the leadership of the CPC. I kind of got involved with that. 2018, 2019, I was there. I helped register the PPC and found it and do all that stuff. And I was doing commentary that whole time. Left the PPC in early 2020. COVID happened. There was a Supreme Court case in BC that I was involved in. Was actually named in. That wasn't the Supreme Court at that time. I think it was the Court of Appeals. I digress. But yeah, I was doing all political commentary of one kind or another all the way through there. And then I did some farm videos when COVID was becoming a thing to try and teach people how to grow food and be more resilient. And the government's going to flip their script and there's going to be a panic and you can just be a calm in the midst of the storm. You know, you don't have to be worried. You can just do some things that'll make you feel better. Understand your rights. Understand you're best defended on your own personal property. Don't take a rapid test because as soon as you get a positive rapid test, that's when your rights go away. So like there was all these things that I did. And then, about 6 months ago, I just decided to get back in because I'd proven to myself that I wasn't addicted to the attention and I just wanted to actually try and do something good with it. And as much as I'm an introvert, I like the woods. I like quiet. I like spending time with my family. I like the meaningful work of my hands. I miss the blood and sweat of the field. But the fact that I could leave it all behind kind of told me that maybe I should come back to it anyway. That's pretty much it.
Well, it seems like, I mean, you go back to Trump and 2015, that's when kind of things sort of started to change for us too. We made the mistake of doing exactly what you, I mean, I will take the point to say that I think I was the first person that I know of to publicly predict that he was going to win. It was after like the first primary. And some people were saying, this is some people we listen to No Agenda show. We were listening to Adam and John on No Agenda. If you haven't checked them out, it's worth checking out. But we were listening to them and they're saying, well, this is his trial run. He's going to get his name out there and he's going to win in 2020. And man, I watched the first primary thing and I was like, I said on the show, I was like, this guy's going to win it all. This is it. There's no primary. There's no nothing. He's going to win it all this year. And we sort of, you know, he was saying all the stuff. We were the same as you, in the same position as you. Directly, everything he was saying was perfect because we were kind of in that. We were already talking about global warming. We're already talking about vaccines. We're already talking about all this stuff. And all of a sudden someone in politics is talking about it. So we made the mistake of, you know, saying, hey, this guy seems all right. And it like instantly cost us half of our audience and, you know, half of our money. So we had to claw back. We had to claw back from that. But I would argue that, you know, less so in 2016, but it helped, and definitely moving into 2024. It got weird in the 2020 election, I would say, just because of the COVID stuff. But in 2024, the alt media in the U.S. really comes out, and you can't argue that they seem to make a huge difference in the election down there when you're talking about whether it's just alternative to the mainstream news on YouTube or it's a major podcast, things like that. Something that, and the reason I bring this up, because you've been at for a while in 2016, 2013, even up to a few years ago, this is something that is severely lacking in Canada. There's no real alternate to the mainstream media. And I was saying even a few months ago that I thought that the alt media still in Canada wasn't really big enough to go up against the mainstream. But then, I mean, I see some other YouTubers that weren't necessarily political with big following sort of jump on board. You know, you got guys like JJ McCullough, who I don't agree with most of the time, but he's got a huge channel and he's talking about how something needs to change and how Carney's more of the same. You've got that huge gun channel. I forget, the name escapes me right now, but it had 1.9 million subs or something like that. Never talked politics before on the channel. And he releases a special video. And then you've got the rise of channels like yours, Northern Perspectives, Jasmine Lane, Clyde Do Something, all these channels have jumped up to 150, 250. I think Mr. Sunshine Baby's up to a half a million or something like that. So do you think that the alternative media in Canada is in this position to challenge the mainstream? Because this weird thing's been happening over the last 2 weeks. And it's that I've seen on the mainstream media them having to call out Mark Carney, you know, multiple times. And I feel like that wouldn't happen a year and a half ago. I feel like it would have got just, they had the ability to just ignore it or not talk about it or just give their talking points, and the CBC especially and the other channels would just go along with it. But there seems to be a weird change in the narrative in the last 2-4 weeks.
Yeah, I think for the mainstream media to maintain any credibility whatsoever, they have to tell at least some of the story. We saw an example of that recently with the headlines that came about China targeting Mark Carney with some kind of, I can't remember the name of the department, but it was like an information operation, and they used the word targeting, and it was actually boosting him and actually promoting his campaign. But they rewrote the headlines and made it sound like he was the victim somehow. And you had to read down 5 paragraphs before you find out that he was benefiting from it. And the CCP is actually pushing the guy. I think there's a greater comprehension. I think there's a greater comprehension now that this is it. They had Bill C-63. They had it passed the House. It was working its way through the Senate, and prorogation killed it. That bill becomes law, and what we're doing right now becomes essentially illegal. I think alternative media in Canada is nearing an inflection point where it becomes far more important to a lot more people than it has been in the past. I think we lag the United States, as we do on most things. We're usually 5 to 10 years behind the United States catching up, and I think we're catching up right now, which is why the liberals tried to do C-63. I believe it was C-63. And I think it's one of the first things that Mark will bring back is the criminalizing of speech, just like they've done in the UK. And part of that is because we're at that critical inflection moment where we might actually start influencing the conversation more than we are right now. So the mainstream does have to pick up on some stories that they'd probably rather not. And the alternative media has an influence on that, but we haven't quite reached that critical mass yet. We're getting close, which is why I think they want to stop it.
YouTube seems to be allowing it, though, on a high level. I mean, YouTube almost seems to be pushing it.
Well, I remember in 2016, 8 days before the election in the United States, it was like this blanket came down and there was no reach anywhere. There was no reach on Facebook. There was no reach on YouTube. I got a community strike because I shared a video of Trump reading a poem, the poem, The Snake. You might have seen him read that poem. But I got a community strike just for posting a video of him saying that. What I've noticed now, and I think it's the X effect, the presence of X and the ability to speak much more freely there than we could in the past. It still has some problems, but it is a fraction of what it used to be. I won't say the keywords that you can't say on X because it'll probably trigger YouTube for you. But the presence of them being the busiest social media platform, I think, has just re-enabled us to have more speech on YouTube and on Facebook. The other thing is I'm not monetized. I'm hesitant to become a YouTube partner because I believe that increases your level of scrutiny, but maybe that's not as applicable as it used to be. But I'm saying a lot more these days on my channel and not really noticing overt shadow banning. I mean, and I think that's the X effect. I think we just have a greater degree of free speech now than we have in recent times, which means we should make the most of it while we have it because it might only last another couple of weeks.
I got let back on X the day after Trump's inauguration, after 2.5 years off. And then, I mean, we got to say the same thing. Our channel sat at 11,000 subs for 3, 4, 5 years, and it just went down. It went down. It actually went from 11 down to like 10.6 or something like that.
Was and also constantly striked out. And
yeah, starting like 3 or 4 months ago, we won an appeal for the first time ever. And then ever since then, our channels started growing again. It started growing. They took off all the warnings. And there seems to be a strange thing happening there now. So how do you think that plays out? We got the liberals. Like, I don't know. It gets weird to start banning social media platforms and doing that much control of speech right next to America. I mean, Mexico seems to get away with it, but how do you see that dynamic sort of playing out? I mean, at what point are we too much? I mean, we see this stuff coming out with China and Carney and the Liberal Party, and you know, it starts to really seem like China's fucking running a couple of our governments, at least to some degree. If we're knowing that, there's no way the Americans don't know. I mean, I go back and forth on whether the Americans are the ones pushing my content on YouTube right now because it's anti-Canadian state.
So the thing is, I don't put too much faith in the U.S. administration, not because I don't believe their intent. I'm pretty bought into their honest intentions. I think Trump wants to do the things he says he's going to do. I think that Elon Musk and Doge, I think they're trying to do exactly what they say they're trying to do. In other departments of the government, there might be a little bit more nuance there. But the issue is, 2016, he gets elected. He has much the same platform that he had today, or that he has today. He got bogged down in Russiagate. He got bogged down in Pissgate. He got bogged down in impeachment. And 2020, COVID comes along. Nukes them out of the election. I mean, my personal opinion is they stole it. I watched all the hearings. I saw everything that, like, I sat through hours of hearings, and I'm like, this is incredible. Nobody cared.
Yeah.
Clearly they did care because they spent the 4 years, Lara Trump and others spent that 4 years making sure elections were cleaner. I certainly don't think the attempt to steal the election was as visible in 24 as it was in 2020. But I digress. That's 8 years since 2016. We're bogged down. And it's amazing that any of the agenda got implemented in the first term. So anyway, here we are in the second term. There are less headwinds domestically for this Trump administration. He's far more powerful than he was in 2016. But there are geopolitical headwinds that could derail his plans. So getting back to Canada and censorship here and everything else. I firmly believe that Mark Carney is here to sacrifice Canada in an effort of the World Economic Forum in China to undermine the United States.
That's what I was going to ask. It.
Yeah, and I think they'll cause us. I think he's here to cause us as much pain as possible trying to undermine the United States on behalf of everyone else. But again, there's more nuance here because the EU does like to use Canada, put us out in front, get Trudeau to go give a press conference and make some statement against Trump. This happened in the first administration, and then they hang him out to dry by making a deal with the United States behind his back. So there's no guarantee that Carney will be as successfully grim under those circumstances. And I honestly think if Mark Carney comes in, the Western separatist movement really gains momentum the very same hour the election results are declared. I don't think that in a net zero world, there's room for Alberta and Saskatchewan to be part of Canada. And that creates a whole other conversation. To ask me what I predict the outcome is going to be is it's really hard because I think we're living in a very fluid moment. I await the election results as a starting point, but it's so fluid that how it manifests, how does Alberta separate? Do they separate? Does Trump get bogged down? Is he successful in countering China? Because right now it looks like China and the United States are both digging in for a prolonged battle. And I mean, it gets pretty complicated pretty quick. The EU and China don't have the best relations. America and China don't have the best relations. So predicting what the EU will try to do and who they'll try to play the Americans off with, and will they be in bed with China or will they be adversarial to China? I mean, China's distanced itself from the EU, was recently invited to some event. Xi was invited to some event in Europe and he said he wasn't going to go. And like, there's a lot of back and forth and wrangling. So I don't know what's guaranteed. I do believe that a Mark Carney win spells a stronger, I think it will test separatism in the West.
I think we had Dave Bjorkman on a couple weeks ago, who founded the first Alberta, or took over the first Alberta Separatist Party before he handed it over to Corey. What's his name? I think he blocked me actually, Corey. I forget his last name. His name escapes me. But anyway, he was talking about how once the U.S. gets involved, that is actually the pathway for Alberta and Saskatchewan to turn into a 51st state is actually a lot easier than it is for a full separation because, yeah, I mean, he brought up some old documents. I'm way out of my element on this. I'm treading in deep water. But he brought up he was spouting off legislation about how if it's under this condition, then it can be just be a majority, first of all, to join the state. So you don't have to do the whole 38 states have to agree and all that sort of thing. He's like, no, it's a simple majority, which Trump can do with the House and the Senate and blah, blah, blah. Now, I can't remember exactly what the context of the legislation he was quoting was, but he basically said on this show that he's like, he's revved all back up again because the 51st state rhetoric sort of changes everything. I don't know if you're familiar with any of that.
I think there's a lot of different avenues the provinces can take to separation if they want to. It's going to be a matter of who your elected it's going to be a matter of which avenue your elected representatives decide they're going to amplify when that time comes. Neither Smith nor Mo have closed the door on the subject altogether. Mo has said we're waiting until the election is done before we comment on Western separatism. The door is wide open. Now, how they want to go and do it? I mean, the provinces are nominally sovereign. There's issues with the legal constitution of Canada, whether the Federation was even designed properly. Yeah. Right now, your politicians aren't talking about that. I don't talk about it very much because I think it goes right over people's heads.
We tried to do a whole series of just dumbing it down, and it still seems to, people are just calling me a Russian bot.
at the end of the day, power is de jure. Power is seized. It's what's in practice. So the RCMP has the power to arrest you. The courts have the power to imprison you. And the government, the federal government right now with cooperation of the provinces, has the ability to tax you at source. That's power to me. And that's very real. Whether it's legally constituted is another story. Now, if a premier decides to go running off with a narrative and start educating the public about it because it becomes politically expedient to do so, and that's the choice we have, that changes the conversation completely. Because then in their way of looking at things, the public is ready to consider other options. I don't believe the United States can afford to let another sovereign nation exist on their border. I think if it comes down to the dissolution of the country, we may not have a choice. Statehood might be the best we can get, because they're looking down the pipe. They're seeing how much China's got its hooks into us already. And they see China, rightly, as a geopolitical adversary that they have to deal with right now, which actually, if China's number one, then Canada is the first subset that you have to deal with, because we're right there on the border. Do they want to deal with one Canada that's corrupt, or do they want to deal with potentially two or three or four Canadas that are corrupt? So I think that's where the idea of statehood comes from. I don't really see a 51st state, as in the entire country of Canada becomes a state, because it's politically, I don't think it works. I don't think the union could hang on to it past Trump if he could even get it done. But if you have a separatist sentiment that's strong and organized around Mark Carney, who wants to put Alberta and Saskatchewan out of business, organized against Mark Carney, well, then the invitation can come. We could ask for help, and we might find that we get it. So, but again, it's really hard to call. We have to see what the elected people do, because whether we like it or not, Smith and Mo have power. Mo just got a fresh mandate. Smith is a little bit more than halfway through hers, and they're the ones that are guiding the ship right now. So we'll see.
There's also the whole Russia-Iran thing that could throw all that China-Canada stuff, you know, could throw the whole world into, you know, throw a wrench in the works with all that. I mean, that might focus all the U.S.'s attention in sooner than later on that whole aspect. But we predicted, or I predicted, when Darren and I have been arguing about the politics in Canada and the election, I was thinking that when Pierre was way up in the polls and Justin was down and we knew there was going to be a change in the Liberals, I predicted that, you know, they're going to bring Carney in. We're going to lose 5% or a small percentage of people over to them right off the bat, because there was sort of like a false, almost like a false following of the Pierre anyways. Like to me, I felt like there was some real intangible people that would just jump to the Liberals as soon as they got a leader like Carney. And then the polls would make it skew it like it's 50-50. And sure enough, that's happening. I mean, it's gross to see it. All of a sudden, the polls are just, you know, showing this. And then they would be able to steal the rest of it. You know, they'd be able to come in. They kind of got it close enough to the polls to make it close enough. And then, I mean, I do feel like our elections are safer than America's. And I agree with you on what happened down there. Talked about it quite a bit. What about Canada's election, especially with you being in the PPC for a bit there? Is it safe, do you think?
My knowledge, which admittedly isn't current, but up to 2021, I'm relatively convinced that Canadian elections are free and fair. Right. People said to me, like, you must have had a higher vote share in 2019, Frank. There's no way you only got 2.1. And I said, I got 2.1. I was lucky to get 2,100 votes, because most of the people said, I'd love to vote for you, but you're running for the wrong party. What do you do? It's paper balloting. It's hand counted. I've worked for Elections Canada on elections. I worked the 2015 election. I've seen the scrutineers come and go. There's a lot of eyes on the count. That being said, maybe there's something new that I don't know about. I don't think they have to steal it, though. I mean, I think there's enough Canadian public that is so hypnotized about the orange man, hypnotized about Trump being bad, that it's so visceral, this hatred of this man, that even the conservatives have to play the game somewhat in their calculation. I'm not making an excuse for it, but they've decided to do what they're doing. And it's because they're measuring a very real contingent of the Canadian population who thinks the guy is Satan come again.
Yep, even a stop the steal button will get you in trouble.
And these are, there's a lot of low information voters out there. And I'm not trying to be insulting when I say that. It sounds insulting, but it really isn't. It's they just don't know what's going on in the world. And they're... Yeah, I... I think there's more liberal support than I would like. I don't know
if
polls are showing.
Yeah, but I agree with you on that. I mean, and it's always it always is whatever Quebec and Ontario want, really. So, I mean, we're still stuck in like, it doesn't really matter what anything like, you know, from Winnipeg West wants, I don't think. I mean,
It doesn't.
So
I can prove it.
So there's that. And I mean, I've experienced it with a boomer recently that like they want a virtue signal about politics, but then they say they don't want to talk about politics. I'm like, you just started talking about politics. And now when I bring back an argument to you, now all of a sudden politics is off the table. Like, it's a real thing that they just cannot discuss whatever's not on the TV. Like, they really just have no idea unless the TV tells them.
The thing that kills me the most about it all is the same group of people that are standing behind Mark Carney are the same people who've been governing the country for 10 years. They literally went from telling you the carbon tax was making you richer to being proud of getting rid of it. This divisive tax, we got rid of it. We're the champions of it. And there are people who follow along with that because they don't have maybe low information is the wrong way to put it. They lack memory enough historical perspective, even near history. They can't string it together in their heads and connect all the dots and go, none of this makes any sense. Freeland's running for re-election. They're all running for re-election. Marco Mendicchio or whatever his name is, he came back. Marco Mendicchio, whatever.
Mendicino or whatever.
Back. He wasn't going to run again. Now he's come back. And they're all coming back out of the woodwork to go under Carney. And it's selling to the Canadian public. At least a chunk of the Canadian public loves it. They think this is great. Trudeau was the problem. And Trudeau's just been disappeared. Like that guy at a Stalin's picture. Like, they're not even asking where he is. We're not talking about his legacy. Nothing. It's like Justin Trudeau's the mystery man. Doesn't exist. And the media goes along with it. So in another sense, and I'll just finish with this, you can actually understand and sympathize a little bit with these people. A lot of them are older. They've got their information from the TV their entire life. They're so heavily victimized and programmed that you almost have to sympathize with them because they just don't know any better.
Yeah, yeah.
They actually think that Mark Carney is somehow an outsider coming in to save the day against the evil Trump.
Yeah, I agree. I
think it was always just Alberta and Saskatchewan that he was talking about. I think it was 51st state was always the prairies. The Americans have had their eyes on Alberta and Saskatchewan since Confederation. I mean, they beat it by a couple of months. Otherwise, that'd be the thing. But I think either way, they need the clear flow to Alaska. They can't be dealing with our bullshit.
No, I think he wants to take over North America I don't even say this in a disparaging way. I think he needs to bulwark it against the world order. The liberal rules based order is falling apart. They had their chance to get us too. They could have had us.
Yeah, but it all happened.
Just destroyed us, and now this seems to be the only bulwark against that. And he wants to secure the whole continent. I mean, that's the way I see it happening because I think he knows how big the risk is to be vulnerable to the rest of the world through Canada.
Once you get us, though, everyone else follows suit. It just takes a couple years, you know? It just sort of... it was funny because Dave gave us a comparison to Texas. He's like 3 years before Texas joined the United States, their politicians were jumping up, down, screaming, saying how it would never happen, it would never happen, it would never happen. And he said 3 years later, after the economic pressure that the Americans put on Texas, the next politician elected was begging to join the union, at which point the union said, nah, you can wait a couple years for the trouble you cause. But it starts to seem like that might be the play going on here. Now, we are about out of time. We got another show coming up. But I do want to address, because someone commented on our Twitter about our chat, about if Alberta separates, how would it shake out all the treaties with the First Nations? The point is often cited by people in arguments, but I don't think many people have a good idea how it might shake out. Well, I am an Indian, so I'll tell you firsthand, a treaty card carrying Indian. So I'm allowed to say Indian too. I get in trouble all the time for that. The Indians are ready to make a deal. You got to remember that all of the First Nations have been, they don't own an acre of their own. Even the land that their houses are on is owned by the federal government. Right. So it is hard to make a deal with these people. I do have a bit of standing. I've written a few books. I write an article out to the chiefs and the council members on exactly this. And as soon as Trump mentioned it, the tone of my articles and my writing immediately went to if the Indians should be paying attention to this more than anyone else in the country, because if you take a look at what's going on south of the border for land ownership and resources and all that kind of stuff, well, it's not perfect. It is fucking 10, 20, 50 times better than anything that's going on in Canada. Child welfare aspect of it has been held up in court in the States that the tribe keeps control of the kids. They don't get parted out all over the country like is still happening in Canada today. 54% of all the kids in foster care are Indians. So, you know, I've kind of has changed the rhetoric of the thing lately, because what Pierre is proposing with the First Nations resource charge would be probably the biggest step towards sovereignty for First Nations in this country since the Confederation. I mean, once they can take the middleman out between them and their money, it gives them a chance to start, you know, why wait for the government to fix your water? We got our own money. We can do it ourselves, and it gives us money to start doing things in court, all sorts of different things that I think is probably the more likely solution now would be if you're an Indigenous person, you should be really reading Pierre's platform, because, you know, that First Nations research charge, just that, if you're an Indian, is a single issue vote right there. Just that changes, upsets the whole apple cart for how things have been going for Indians in this country for the last 150 years. But from a separation standpoint, the First Nations that got to become a state instead of a province would immediately become a dependent nation instead of a, you know, all these sort of things that would be an easy sell to an informed public. Would be an easy sell. If you could get the chiefs on board and actually talk to the people, it's a no fucking brainer. You know, it's like picking not getting hit by a car versus getting hit by a car. Those are sort of, you know, but the problem is getting the information out to them, you know, getting the information out to them. A lot of my stuff stops at the chief and the council because they're not interested in their people reading what I have to say. So, Frank, this has been great. We have to do it again before too long. You're right next door out in the good country. Where can people find all your stuff, your social media, all that good stuff?
It's getting shilled in my window there, frankvaughn.ca, and then it's FPVaughn3rd on Twitter. And basically, if you search my name anywhere, you'll probably find me.
Awesome, buddy. Thanks for coming on.
Yeah, thanks. We'll do it again for sure.
Absolutely. You have a great day.
Take care.
You too.
And that was a chat with Frank Vaughn. Much obliged. Our other show was supposed to be at 4, but they moved it up to 3. So I said 3:10. So we
I see. That's why. Oh, because I was going to squeeze another question in there. I wanted to ask him about the crown and all that. But
we'll just have to do it again. We'll get Frank back on the show now that we've had him on. It gets easier. After the first time, it's easier to get people on. So alist.ca. If you guys like what we're doing and you want to support us, head over there. We can't really do anything else. So. You know, no, the government doesn't give us money to do this, and we don't want paywall any of this or anything like that because it's important content. So alist.ca, a-list, like it is behind Graham in the picture there, .ca, if you want to support us, subscribe, like, tell your friends, all that stuff, and check out grammerica.ca for everything else we do, from events to books and everything in between. Other than that, we love you guys. Thanks for listening, and we will see you next week.
Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never political anyhow. Since when did you start trusting in the government? Since when was it okay to ridicule and shame your neighbor? Your opinions have become as fickle as artificial flavors. What matters most to you? What the TV host told you to do, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. Who's gonna kill this sacred cow? You were never religious anyhow. Since when did you kiss the ring on the hand of the Pope? Since when do we need pharmaceuticals to cope? Your soul has become, ever-loving soul has become, as brittle as communion wafers. What matters most to you? What the Holy Ghost told you to do? Or a moral compass that points true north, oh true? I'm gonna keep kill. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. Bureaucrats think I'm non-essential anyhow. Since when has our culture become so lowbrow? It's all touchscreens, and nobody has any know-how. Your idea of fun, your idea of fun, is taking 1,001 photos of your duck face. Matters most to you what the celebrity's post told you was cool, or a moral compass that points true north, oh true. I'm gonna kill this sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your 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 sacred cow. I'm gonna kill, I'm gonna kill, your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow. I'm gonna kill your sacred cow.